When you're writing in first person present tense, one of the weird disconnects that the adult brain has is, so wait a minute. You're standing in front of me, telling me a story right now about something you're doing right now, somewhere else right now. But you're in front of me right now, but you're also over there right now. And so, whether the reader realizes or not, there is a disconnect there that it's harder to suspend disbelief just because they can't just fall into it, as opposed to the characters in front of me right now telling me something they're doing in the past. It's in the past tense. So it's easier for the adult mind to suspend that disbelief.
Releasing your inner dragon.
So we have another brave human being who has sent us their baby, their first chapter, their introduction to their story for us to apply our editing pens to it and return it covered in the red ink of its blood, destroyed and lying in a corner.
You sound like a writer.
Wrecked. Yeah, we have received another chapter for editing. So I will admit I have not read it. I have glanced at the first chapter. Drake has not read it. So we are going
Always
to
come into these things blind.
we're gonna hit this blind and we will see how far it takes us and what this person will learn from our editing. All right,
Yep.
so I'm going to share my screen.
And while she's doing that, if you guys would like to have your pride and joy slaughtered on YouTube, just send us, whatever. Send us, I mean, you really don't need to send us more than about 1,000 words. If you've been paying attention, we rarely get past 300 or 400 or 500 words. We can fill an hour usually on somebody's first 300 or 400 or 500 words. But send us 1,000 words, send us the first chapter, whatever, to releasingyourinnerdragon@gmail.com. The email will be in the link below. And when we do these, because we're always looking at doing these every now and again, we do them more on a whim. We like to have one in the, one of the editing things that we could do. And we were, I think both of us are kind of tired today, and we were like, you know what? Instead of talking about the topic, let's have some fun. So send us your submission and we will eventually get to it and critique it.
Yeah. All right. So if you are not on YouTube, this might be a good episode for you to go to our YouTube channel and subscribe if you're listening to the audio only. But we will, of course, read as we normally do. Okay, so I am going to read the first paragraph or so, or maybe the first page until Drake puts his hand up and we've got something to discuss.
Or you just stop because you want to
Or I
discuss.
stop because I have something to discuss.
Because that
Yeah.
happens too.
It does happen. I press the accelerator of my Aero V12 to the floor. The engine roars, drowning out all other sound as my Aero slingshots me through the Badlands of my current home, Summit City. The open road in the Badlands is the single place I'm truly free. Free of society, free of others' expectations, free of vulnerability that attachments bring. Life taught me it is best to depend on myself over relying on others. Not everyone can handle the therapy the Badlands hands out. You either love it or hate it, but either way, the Badlands tries to kill you, sort of like Australia. It's my first home, and returning to it cleanses me of the city's filth and grip on my soul. Okay,
So,
so, yeah.
oh, go ahead. No, go ahead.
Okay, so I like the opening paragraph, but I have some problems. The first sentence is doing too much.
Yeah, it's a run-on sentence. Before we get into that, so I can't remember which of my critique pods somebody brought. I think it was the Tuesday critique pod in the writer's room. Somebody brought a first person present tense piece. Now, anybody who's listening to this knows that I hate first person present tense. You do not like present tense. But we will never use that as our critique. Like, this is first person tense. We're going to critique it and we're going to do it exactly the way it should be done. It will be hard for us to, or at least I know it is for me. I can't edit live because I keep wanting to, my brain wants everything in past tense. So, I'll make mistakes in the editing because I might say, if it was written this way, I'll do it in past tense. However, I did want to, with my writer's room member, and I want to do it now. I want to talk about, there are two reasons why I tell people to at least think about whether they should use first person present tense or not. And one is a business reason, and one is a story-based reason. Neither one of them should be taken as you should not write in first person present tense. First of all, there are genres that are much more accepting than other genres. But also some stories might actually, I mean, I do have a published story that's published in first person present tense. It's a short story, but still, I do have something published in this. There are reasons for using it. But there are two things that I do think that people should think about. So first, from a business standpoint, one of the hardest things to do in this industry is to sell your first book. The second hardest thing to do is to sell the second book. The third hardest thing is to sell the third. The first 10,000 hardest things are to sell the first 10,000 copies of your book. The 10,001st hardest thing is to actually write the book, but it's way easier than selling the first 10,000. And the reality is, there is a percentage of every genre who refuse to read present tense. In our genre of epic fantasy, it's closer to 40%. They just will not read present tense. They will put the book down. In romance, it's much less. In YA, it's much less. Those genres have been kind of force-fed the first person present tense kind of thing. So maybe it's less than 10%. There is still a percentage. I've never not met someone in any genre who, where I haven't found somebody who said, oh, yeah, no, I'll put the book down if it's in present tense. So what that means to me from a business standpoint is I know the hardest thing in the world is to sell copies of my books to new readers. And if I'm in romance or YA, that means 1 out of 10 are going to put the book down. If I'm in, our genre, we're talking 4, maybe 5 out of 10 are going to put the book down. So from a business standpoint, that just seems like a dumb idea to me. That's just flat out. Do you have anything to say on the business side before I move to?
No, I think you've covered it.
All right. So now let's talk about from a story side. This is going to get geeky grammar. Manipulation of time is the most important thing for us as storytellers, the ability to move in the past, move in the future, all of this stuff. And so when we're talking about time manipulation, what we're really talking about is verb forms. And we have four verb forms in the English language. We have future tense, present tense, past tense, and past perfect tense. Past perfect being the time period before the past tense of, past tense. When you are writing in past tense, you have access to all verb forms. You can slip before the past tense, you're in past tense, you have future tense, you have present tense in your dialogue. And what that brings to your toolbox as a writer is this amazing ability to be able to manipulate time. I mean, I've read here on the podcast that one paragraph in my current work in progress, where in one paragraph, you're in the now of the past tense. We then slip back 1500 years in the next sentence, and then we're back to the now of the past tense. And it's flawless. Nobody even notices that they're being herky-jerkied all over the place. When you're in first person, so let's not even talk about tenses. When you're in first person is the most limiting of the POVs. And what I mean by that is that depending on the story that you're telling, if you try to do too much in first person, you will break the first person will just break your story or at least hinder it. So, like one of the big topics of contention in first person is, people will write multiple POVs in first person. And they're like, oh, of course I can do it. Technically, you can't. And there's literally no way to do it without some type of problem for the reader. Yes, you can cheat, like this writer that had come to the podcast, she was writing two narrating characters. And she's like, yeah, but at the beginning of this chapter, it says John. In the beginning of the next chapter, it says Sally, and she does that every single chapter. I'm like, okay, that's great. It's a crappy, you know, title header that you have to tell the reader whose character you're in. But it's also the magic of first person is building this very intimate relationship between the reader and one character by forcing them to build that same level of intimate relationship with another character, or God forbid, three or four characters. You are never going to get them to buy in at the same level as they will with one character. And so if you are telling a story with multiple characters, first person's going to hinder you. It looked like you had some things to say.
I will die on this hill. You cannot do multi POV with first person well.
No.
You cannot.
You can't do it flawless.
I will die on this hill.
Yeah.
At least not in one book. So, for example, Jacqueline Carey did it, but she did it in different books.
Right.
Each book has got a different first person narrator.
Right.
100% you can do that. But you cannot switch in a chapter. And the reason why you can't switch in a chapter is because the strength of first person lies in the narrating voice.
Yes.
It lies in the fact that every word of prose is internal monologue. So I am literally in the head of the character. I am every single thing is through that narrating voice. And in order for you to switch to a different narrating voice, you would have to have as strong a voice, which means I now have these two competing voices in my head.
Yeah.
I don't buy that you can do that.
But it's even worse than that, in my opinion, because the problem is that each one of them, their name is I.
Yeah.
So that's like writing third person where every single character is named John.
Yep.
So what you run into is weird things. And I'm going to exaggerate, of course, but you run into weird things like, you know, chapter one, I woke up, I stretched, I yawned, I went to the bathroom, I stood in front of the toilet and I peed. Chapter two, I woke up, I yawned, I stretched, and I went into the bathroom and I inserted a tampon. It's like, wait, what? So yes, I'm exaggerating, obviously, but that's the problem is that they're both I. There's no, you know, great way to distinguish between the two. Mm-hmm. And so you're going to constantly make stuff up and you're going to have to constantly tell things to your reader and you're going to have to use some weird acrobatics to try and not lose your reader through these things.
So it comes down to voice for me because that I is attached to a single thing.
Yeah.
Right. I have less of a problem with the swap around that, but that's okay. So Finnish only has one,
right?
one pronoun. Finnish only has one pronoun, han, and han applies to men, it applies to women, it applies to the desk, it applies everything. Everything is han. There is nothing else. There is only han. and so I'm used to that kind of verbal gymnastics. But to me, it's more about like the strength of the voice. And maybe even that single pronoun makes it more apparent.
Right.
Because in Finnish, you derive from context everything gender-wise about the character.
Right.
Right. You have to. There's no other way to do it.
But anyone that was raised in a romantic language.
Yeah. No, 100%. But what I'm saying is because of that, the voice of the narrator is so important to me because it gives you the context. And now you're asking me to switch context on a pronoun that I associate with a singular person, person.
Yeah.
And that for me is very hard.
So again, if you're depending on the story, that's depending on the complexity of the story, first person is the most limiting of the POVs that we have access to. And that's why I never write in a POV. I'm telling a story, and then that story is going to let me know what is going to be the best POV to tell that story in, which is why I have stories in first person and in third person and so on and so forth. Because depending on the story, like, let's say the story has to include crowd emotions and feelings. Well, then you're stuck in third person omniscient because that's the only POV where you can be the whole town or the whole country or the whole world. You can't do that in a limited POV. And so if the story requires being in the head of the entire society, there's no way to do it in limited. You're just out. So again, that's why I never write in a POV. I look at my story and I go, okay, what POV is going to, because every POV, omniscient, third, limited, first person, they all have advantages and disadvantages. All of them have disadvantages. So what you want to do is go, okay, so which POV, this is the story I want to tell, which POV's advantages are going to help this story more than their disadvantages are going to hinder it? And that's how I choose my, and what we're talking about here, where you have multiple, if the story needs multiple POV characters, then the negative that first person brings to trying to run more than one character through a first person story far outweighs the benefits that first person is going to bring to the story. And so I'm just not going to do it. So that's the one thing, you know, from the point of view. But now let's add in tense. So as I said, when you're in present tense, you get present tense verb forms and future tense verb forms, which we use very few future tense verb forms. You literally don't really get past tense, and you definitely don't get past
perfect tense. You use none in Finnish.
Yeah, well, that's Finnish. you also have no consonants. Wasn't there a war where the Poles
Yeah, there was. There was a war with Poland, and they walked away with all the consonants, leaving us only the vowels. And no future tense.
If I really want to pick on you, I still think it's hilarious what you call your spouses. Because the Finnish word for spouse basically translates to what? The person I hate the least or something like
I
that.
I hate you less than other people.
I hate you less than other people. So let's get married.
Hey, we are the happiest people in the world for the 7th year running. Yeah. And that is because we have low expectations.
They cheated on me, but they were just the person I hated the least of everyone else. Like, it's not that big of a deal.
Low expectations, man. They'll ensure your happiness.
I'm still happy. Oh, my goodness. So, getting back to the tenses. Again, it comes down to building that illusion. Just like first person builds the illusion that it's me and this other character and we're just going against the world. When you're in present tense, you're building this illusion that everything's happening right now. And so when you go into backstory, when you have to bring in that past tense of something that happened before the now that you're telling, you're literally rocking the boat. You're breaking that illusion and kind of throwing stuff in that's always going to feel weird. It's always, no matter what you do, every sentence is going to be, it's any savvy reader is going to go, wait, oh, they did a typo. Oh, no, that's actually right. And so now I'm not watching the movie. I'm actually trying to grade your grammar. But I think it's even worse than that. And this isn't just me, because I know people who also feel this way. So for the adult mind, like one of the reasons why if you write second person, it has to be in past tense. It has to be in present tense.
Yeah.
Because you can tell me you're creeping into a room right now and there's a scary sound right now and this is what you hear. Like, and I'll go, oh, okay, yeah, I'm there because I'm just reading. But you can't tell me last night you went into this creepy room. I'm like, no, last night I was at the movies. Like, what are you talking about? So it has to be in present tense because it's the only way to trick the human mind to suspend disbelief. Mm. When you're writing in first person present tense, one of the weird disconnects that the adult brain has is, so wait a minute, you're standing in front of me telling me a story right now about something you're doing right now somewhere else right now. But you're in front of me right now, but you're also over there right now. And so whether the reader realizes or not, there is a disconnect there that it's harder to suspend disbelief just because they can't just fall into it, as opposed to the characters in front of me right now telling me something they're doing in the past. It's in the past tense. So it's easier for the adult mind to suspend that disbelief.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
Not saying don't write in first person present tense. Not in any way saying that. I'm saying from a business standpoint, you have to understand that there's going to be a percentage of your readers that are just not going to read your stuff and not going to buy your stuff. So if you're cool with that, then be cool with it. Second side of it is make sure that the story, like Hunger Games, Hunger, you cannot get a more simplistic story structure than Hunger Games. And every time I say that to somebody who's a fan, they're like, "Oh, it was a very complex story." No, it wasn't. The world was complex. The world building was complex. All of that was complex. But the story itself was one straight line with a dot at the beginning and a dot at the end. That's the structure. It starts with one character. It does not have any backstory, side plots, subplots, or anything like that. It goes linearly straightforward until the end. And that's it. That's the story structure. It's a straight line. You can't get more simplistic than that. So first person present tense is not going to hurt that story because it doesn't have anything there for it to hurt. It's when you need backstory or subplots or side plots or, parallel stories or multiple characters or any of these other things that we're doing, that is where the structure gets more complex. And first person, especially first person present tense, just is gonna always, you're swimming upstream. You're fighting the point of view and the tense you've chosen that's gonna be, an obstacle to the story that you're telling, as opposed to helping the story that you're telling. But anyway, just want to go in
I
that
do
since we
want,
started.
I want to bring us back to the actual paragraph. I do like, however, like all that being said, I do like the opening here. I like that we are moving. I like that we are active. I like that we have a location. We know it's our current home, Summit City. I like the expression of ourselves. We're free of society, free of others'
It
expectations.
gives us motivation and what we want, what is important to us. That's the thing. That's what's going to connect the reader to a character, is understanding what they want, what's important to them, what is their love. And if it's something that we can relate to, like being free of all this bull crap, because we're all stuck in that. So yes, 100% great first paragraph, 100% that opening line needs to be at least three sentences.
So there's a couple of line editing stuff, and I want to do that before because I'm going to unload on that second paragraph. I can already see it coming. So I want to get some line edits here on the first paragraph. So it is a run-on sentence. Now, the way that I like to think of a sentence is count how many pieces of information you're giving the reader and try to restrict any given sentence to like maybe three, four, five at a stretch. All right. So if we look here, we have the action we're doing. We're pressing an accelerator. We have the vehicle we're doing it in, an Aero V12. We have the engine roaring. It drowns out all other sounds. We're getting slingshot through the Badlands, and we've learned about the current home and its Summit City. Okay. That is seven pieces of information in a single sentence. Seven pieces of information is at least three too many, in my opinion. So I would break up, I would press the accelerator of my Aero V12 to the floor, and the engine roars.
Actually, I would go even before then. I pressed the accelerator to the to the floor, period. The engine roared, or roars again. I'm going to always turn it past tense. The engine roared, drowning out all other sounds, period. My arrow slingshoots me. I can't do past present tense.
Slingshots me
Badlands.
through the Badlands to my current home, Summit City.
I mean, that's the way I would do it. But this is all subjective. You can do whatever, you could easily do it. I press the accelerator, my Aero V12 to the floor, and the engine roared or roars. Period. It drowned out all of the sounds. And that's the reason why I don't like it that way, because now we're adding this it in there that doesn't need to be there, because of the fact that
100%.
we can just have the engine roars drowning out all those sounds. So, and this is why sentence structure is so important. So, I mean, look at how petty that is that I just went down. The difference between I press the accelerator of my Aero V12 to the floor, comma, and the engine roars, period. Now we have to add a pronoun. It drowned out, or it drowns out, whatever. And so by instead of putting it the period before the engine roars and letting that be the noun of the sentence, the subject of the sentence, the subject and verb, actually, the engine roars, comma, drowning out all of the sounds, period. We don't need that that extra pronoun. I'm constantly looking for ways to cut down on my pronouns.
Yep.
And sentence structure is how you do it.
Now, the other thing is paragraph structure gives emphasis. Okay. This line here, free of society, free of others' expectations, free of the vulnerability that attachments bring, that is a powerful line. It is a powerful sentiment. It is a powerful understanding. And it is buried in the middle of the paragraph.
100%.
So when you have a line which is so strong and so central to the character, put it in its own paragraph.
Well, let's back up. Because if we're looking at, I agree with that, and that's going to stay the way it is. But if we look at the first paragraph, the I press my accelerators, all actions, and then the open road is this esoteric comment. So even that could be, and it doesn't have to be, this is all subjective, but even that could be, because it also is a pretty strong statement. And then, yeah, you can do what you did here and just combine all the esoteric stuff up into one. So the open road is the start of the paragraph, free of society. The other thing I would say is when you use it occasionally, there is a strength to cadence.
Yes.
And so we're
you
using...
You could do this, right? But then you need to pay this off. So you could do this. Free of others' expectations. So you could say free of society. Period, paragraph break. Free of others' expectation. Period, paragraph break. Free of the vulnerability that attachments bring. Now, that does a couple of things for you. One, it gives you a very nicely cascading paragraph structure because of the length of the sentences. It draws attention to what is going on the page. It is very strong. It reads very strong. But if you're going to go that strong with a sentiment, it needs to be at the heart of this character. Because if you don't set it up like that, then you're basically setting up a Chekhov's gun of emotional motivation.
And so that's awesome. I was going to go here later, but let's start here and work backwards. I was going to go the other way. Yes, this is the strongest way to do it. This means that the reader, you are saying this character, their entire existence derives from their desire to be free. And I'm going to pay that off in this story. But let's say it's not as strong as that, but it's still a good element of this character. Maybe we'd do it all in one paragraph, but still separate sentences. So the open road to the Badlands is a single place I truly feel free, free of society, free of others' expectations, free of the vulnerability, all in one paragraph. That is still adding that strength to them. Yes, they're fragmented sentences, but it's still, it's just not as, it's not going to draw it. And again, it depends on what you're trying to do. And then technically we can do it, if it really doesn't mean that much, we could do it with the commas like it was originally done. Free of society, comma, free of others' expectations, comma. But that's the least dramatic way to write it. So this is subjective.
Yeah. And it depends. It's subjective, but it also depends on how core this is to your character.
Right. That's what I'm saying. We're taking liberties with the writer's story because we don't know. So you as the writer need to understand doing it one way with commas means that you're not really forcing the reader to have to contemplate these three kind of things, putting them in their own individual sentences, fragmented sentences, but in the same paragraph, the reader's going to have to put more emphasis on them and think about them a little bit more. Dividing each one out is not only a fragmented sentence on its own, but a paragraph on its own in three consecutive paragraphs. That's the one that's going to really make the reader have to go, okay, this is important. This is serious. This literally is the core of this character. So it, and this is why I stress so much of why sentence structure and paragraph structure is so instrumental to controlling the reader, controlling what they think about, controlling what they are paying attention to, controlling what they, what the emotions they're feeling, and so on and so forth. You can do so much with just, no, not even, we didn't change a single word. But yet these are three completely different. They're going to be read completely three. Blah. They're going to be read three completely different ways by literally just punctuation.
Yeah. So all of that is, I agree. on all of those, because that was my big points there. Then the next section of that paragraph is, life taught me it's best to depend on myself over relying on others. Not everyone can handle the therapy that the Badlands hands out. And here again, the sentence is doing too much, guys. Okay? So not everyone can handle the therapy that the Badlands hands out. A period would do much better here than that comma.
100%.
Because it allows you to then break apart, not everyone can handle the therapy, and then you either love it or you hate it. And
And
you
then,
don't have the two ideas clashing into the same
but
sentence.
then you need another period at the end of that because we're still going on too long.
Yeah. You either love it or hate it.
Because
Also,
that is not, that's a strong
but and
statement.
either way is the same sentiment. It's a tautology.
Because then we don't need but. So you either love it or you hate it. We want them to swallow that separately. I didn't say that so far this podcast, but I've said this in the past. I do see punctuation as bites of food. So when do we want the reader to swallow? They're going to swallow and mix all those flavors up. So when you have all of these flavors, so we talked about, like in that first sentence where you had seven ideas, but you could also think about those ideas as flavors. So not everyone can handle the therapy of the Badland that the Badlands hands out. That's a flavor. Let's say that's chocolate. You either love it or you hate it. That is lemon juice. And then either way, the Badland tries to kill you, sort of like Australia. That is, I don't know, what would not go with those? That's steak. And so I don't want them to take a bite of chocolate steak with lemon juice on it. I want them to taste the chocolate. And then taste the lemon juice and then taste the steak. I want them to taste each of these individually so that they swallow them individually and consume them the way I want them consumed, as opposed to a steak covered in chocolate and lemon juice in one bite. That's just, oh, I love all three of those other things, but together, I don't think that's going to be very tasty. So that's the problem with run-on sentences to me. You actually, the reader does not consume what you think they're consuming. You consume it because, again, you're the writer, so it makes perfect sense to you. But they swallow every single sentence, and then they clean their palate. They take their sip of water between paragraphs. That's why it's so important to for that paragraph structure. So if we go back up to those three lines, the free of this, free of that, free of that, they're cleaning their palate between each one of those, and so each one now is this. That's almost like a new meal.
Impactful.
Yeah. Run-on
Okay,
sentences are
so
always bad. They're just, unless it's something so mundane and it's all connected. I always use this as an example. Drake walked into the kitchen, picked up a pot filled with water, and put it on the stove to heat. Technically, it's just one motion. But if for whatever reason I need to give the information to the reader, if I need to write that sentence, running it as a run-on sentence is not going to hurt anything. Plus it's just mundane, so who cares? We've all done it,
the only reason to write a run-on sentence is because you need to communicate the motion to the reader, but you don't want them to retain anything out of it. You just want it to be action that just drifts by, blurred action in the background.
Because maybe
Okay.
later in that scene, ninjas attack, and I end up using the pot of boiling water to throw it into his face. So now it doesn't come out of nowhere because we saw it, but me actually starting the pot boiling doesn't matter. So it's just this background thing that we plant it so that later I can use that pot of boiling water in a fight or whatever.
So then we come to the last sentence. It's my first home, and returning to it cleanses me of the city's filth and grip on my soul. So I have a problem with this sentence. So, and I'll tell you what it is. Here we are with, I press the accelerator of my Aero V12, and we are getting slingshot through the Badlands to our current home, Summit in the City, right? This sentence threw me out. It's my first home. Because I, and this might be a present tense problem, but what I ended up here was going, okay, so we're leaving the Badlands. And then it's my first home and we're returning to it. So I got a forward backward kind of impression. Because this sentence, because it has that returning to it sentiment in it, threw me out because I just read that we're leaving it. Right? Do you understand what I mean?
I do.
Okay.
I'll answer for them.
So this needs to be visiting it, maybe. Like
Well, I
visiting
actually,
could work or some, but
but I also
that
think the first home and current home, first of all, we don't want home twice, like in rapid succession when it could be something else, because there's 10 other ways that you could write that sentence. I think that dichotomy, because here's the thing, actually it'd be the first one that I would change. Here's the thing. You're using in this last sentence, it's my first home. You're using home in the context of a place that I love. But you're, in the first one, my current home, you're not using that in that context. So you could easily say, my arrow slingshoots me through the Badlands to my current residence, or my current the current place where I keep my stuff. Or whatever. There's a million ways we could write that, without having to write home, because then home has a much better meaning down here.
Because, and if you replace that with, if you say my current residence or something like it, then you can cut the first as well, and you can just make it home, which is much more powerful. But I still would cut that returning and change it to something like visiting or something like that, because the returning, I think, is what threw me.
I can see
Because we were
that.
leaving it, but now we're returning to it. At least that's what it felt like to me. So I think that's a verb choice that you can make there that would be a better verb choice. All right. Then let me read paragraph two. After 2 weeks of eating dust and suffering under the constant heat of the summer sun, even I am ready to get back to my flat to take a nice long bath and eat something besides kibble. The final 3 hours tick by about half as fast as it should. The long broken road surrounded by miles of dust and sand creates an endless landscape interrupted by occasional broken down buildings, long deserted towns, or roving caravans searching for resources in the Badlands. Just as time almost stretched on forever, the city loomed. Shouldn't that be looms?
Actually,
On
the
the
last
horizon.
paragraph was a complete tense shift as well.
Yeah.
We'll get into that.
loomed on the horizon. Welcoming me home with its bright lights, vice-infected districts, and sickly smells. I drove into its maw, every bit as rugged and dangerous as the Badlands, just less honest and filled with false hope for those that live there. After a few more miles, I am home. Getting out of the aero, I activated the lockdown mode. Okay. So again, I'll start with something that I like. I do like the noir feel of this. It's got a very nice noir feel. Yeah. Now, there's a lot wrong here, that being said. Okay. One is that there is a tense shift here. Okay. We shift from present tense to past tense. Pick one. I personally would recommend past tense. I don't think you need to saddle yourself with present tense. So I would rewrite the first paragraph in past tense and continue in past tense because I see we go back to I drag my weary bones. So.
Well, so this. So this is a great example of literally where I went when I was just talking about the perils of first person past tense or present tense. So in that paragraph, in the third sentence, it starts with the long broken road.
Yeah.
We're in past, this is a tense shift. So this should be the long broken road surrounds miles of dust and sand. Creating
Creating an
an
endless
endless
landscape.
landscape. But then we get to interrupted. This is going to always feel herky jerky because you're going from present tense to a past tense verb. There's no other way to write that sentence there. So to avoid that, you have to reconstruct the sentence to make the buildings, the broken down buildings, become the subject. Because now we can have the broken down buildings interrupt the occasional or the endless landscape. Sorry. Broken down buildings interrupt the endless landscape. That's the only way to keep it in present tense. And that's the problem so many people have with present tense. because this sentence can't be written. I mean, it is a tense shift. The first one is a tense shift. It should be long broken road. The long broken road surrounds
miles of dust and sand. No, you're there.
Yeah, the long broken road doesn't surround it. You read it, the long broken road surrounded by miles. So let's say it was written that way. So again, if it is written that way, let's say, because you did read by. So let's say that the writer wrote, the long broken road surrounded by, you know, blah, 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 blah. Again, it has to be written by surrounded. So the only way to keep it in present tense, we would have to write it, we'd have to reverse it. Miles of dust and sand surround the long broken road. That's the only way we're going to be able to keep that in.
But it's still a tense shift because he says the long broken road surrounded miles of dust and sand. It should be the long broken road surrounds miles of dust and sand.
If it doesn't have the by. So you read it with the by, so it wasn't a tense shift. It was just you have to write it in past tense.
Yeah.
Because you have to slip in a past tense from your present tense story because the miles of dust and sand have already surrounded the road. So if you're going to write it this way and you have the by, again, you have to have that by between surrounded and miles, then it would not be a tense shift, but it would still feel like a tense shift because you're going from present tense to past tense. Yep. If it was written in present tense, the long broken road surrounds miles of dust and sand, as that's what it should have been. If the road is actually around the miles of dust and sand, if that's the picture that the writer is trying to paint, then yes, it's a tense shift 100%. It should have been surrounds and not surround it. It depends on, did they tense shift or did they miss the word by?
Oh, I see what you're saying. They probably missed the word by.
That's what I'm thinking. So if they missed the word by, then this is correct. It's not a tense shift because you intended to slip into past tense, but that hurts the fact that you're writing in present tense. So I wouldn't write it like this. I would flip the sentence around. If this is the image I'm painting and I'm writing in present tense, I would write, miles of dust and sand surround the long broken road.
Yeah.
Because then that keeps it in present tense as opposed to this weird past tense being thrown in. Again, all of these are problems that present tense and trying to write in present tense cause.
Yeah.
Because none of us tell stories in present tense. We don't tell stories in real life. When we were 2 years old and we were talking about Jimmy punching us in the face, it already happened. We have always told stories in past tense. It is the natural way to tell stories, bar none, period. I hate that present tense has become even a thing. But here's the other thing that you have to understand of why present tense, especially first person present tense, has become relevant. Because the industry is filled with stupid people. I'm going to say it and I'm going to stand by it. The industry looked at Hunger Games and went, oh, wow, Hunger Games was a success. Why? Now, they could have chosen that it's a good story. They could have chosen that it was well written. They could have chosen it had dynamic characters. No, they didn't. None of that could be it. It must be because it's written in first person present tense, which is the dumbest conclusion to come to. And then they were reaffirmed in that belief with next year Divergent coming out. And it was also written in first person present tense. So the industry went, yep, that proves it. Present tense. Let's start buying a bunch of present tense. First person present tense stories for YA, because that's the only reason why these kids are buying this book is because it's in first person present tense. That is how dumb the industry is. They are lemmings. And if you're with the industry and you're listening to this, I hope you take offense. I don't care. And I'm not saying you personally, maybe you also think that the industry is filled with dumb people, but that is literally why first person present tense has become relevant.
I think the most lemming behavior I've ever seen in my entire life was when I heard that Warner Brothers and Mattel are now bringing out an entire Barbie universe of movies, because Barbie was successful because it was about a toy. And it's like, that's the lesson you're taking out? Seriously? That's the lesson?
Yeah. My favorite of how stupid the industry actually is, and I've told this story once, but it's been years. So I'm good friends with Todd Lockwood. He's probably the most famous Magic the Gathering fantasy illustrator on the planet right now. He wrote a book about a girl and her dragon and all this stuff. And he's most famous for drawing dragons. And I want to say it was Dell. I don't remember who bought it. But anyway, somebody bought it. And he was like, great. Here's the cover that I drew for you. Now, this is a man who gets paid $5,000 for cover art. And he works for every major publisher. And this is one of the major publishers that he works for. They literally pay him, I don't know, 60, 70, 80,000 a year just to give covers to them. So he gives them one for free for his book. And they go, oh yeah, no, we're not using your art for this book. And he was like, what? So yeah, you're the writer. You can't be the cover artist. That's impossible. And he's like, but I'm Todd Lockwood. I literally am the best dragon artist in the world. Like, of course I'm gonna draw the dragon cover for my dragon book. Like, why? That would be insane not to. 2 years. 2 years they fought him on this until finally Tor was like, we'll buy your book and let you give us a free cover for it. Fine. And that's when the original publisher, and like I said, I can't remember who it was, but they were like, okay, fine, we'll do it. Like, that's how dumb these people are. Like,
Anyway.
because writers cannot draw their cover, they wouldn't let the most famous illustrator in the world give them a free cover for his book that they bought. Like, that is the epitome of how stupid these people are. So,
Anyway. So to get back to this,
yeah, long rant on first person presidents.
we've got to get off this first person present tense
The
horse and
theme is
focus
me and
on
Marie hate first person presidents. That's the theme.
stuff. Okay, so it's also a run-on sentence, and that's
Yes.
what I don't like about it. All
Yes.
right, then we come to just as time almost stretched on forever, the city loomed on the horizon, welcoming me home. With its another very long run-on sentence. Okay.
Yep. And the next one's a run-on sentence as well. But anyway, yeah.
We've talked about Durant, but what I actually want to talk about here, because we've covered run-on sentences, but what I want to talk about here is just as time almost stretched on forever is a very weak way to give a very good concept. Time stretched on forever, punctuated by the city looming before me. Is a much like just lose the just, lose the almost.
So I agree, but even if you kept the just, because the just at least juxtapositions the two, it's the almost. Almost began, started. Those words almost always should be cut because they actually weaken the story. So even if we just cut the almost and it reads, just as time stretches, and again, you tense shifted because you tense shifted through this whole paragraph. Because loomed also is a tense shift. So if we want to keep this in present tense, just as time tr stretches on forever, the city looms on the horizon. Now, I've got another issue with this that I'll get to in a second, but the almost, nothing, listen to Yoda, do or do not. So things don't need to almost do anything. Things don't need to kind of sort of be like, you know, almost like a, you know, a drowning rat. No, like a drowning rat, this thing, it's so much stronger. If it's a simile anyway, you're just painting a picture. Don't paint a half picture, you know, almost as if, you know, like time stretches. What picture are you painting? Paint the picture. Time stretches off forever. You're already, I mean, it's drama. Doing this started to began to sort of kind of like almost it just weakens your message.
And I've had some people who say to me in the first chapter of my first person book, I have a thing which is like a twister had blown through the living room. And I've had some people go like, but it's not a literal twister, right? You should say they like a twister had blown through. And I was like, no. I hear your commentary that I should do that, but anybody who reads an urban fantasy should know that a twister hasn't literally blowing through the living room. It is like, and putting in the like already weakens the sentence. Like here, Putting in a like weakens the sentence. If you now add an almost on top of that, you have a doubly weak sentence.
Yep, 100%. Same thing with the just. That's why I said I agree with you on the just. I just want to focus in on the almost.
Yeah. You can leave the just if you're married to it, but the almost has to go.
So here's the thing. Let's talk about two things. First of all, you're always going to have what I call word Nazis. So that whole, well, it's like a twister. Yeah. Shut up, word Nazi. I don't care about you. Same thing. Like one of the first people I ever got in a fight with in a writer's group, and this is probably 30 years ago, but I had written something like fire danced over the blade as he withdrew it from his scabbard. And this one woman from the crowd was like, fire can't actually dance. And I'm like, I will never listen to you again, no matter what you say. So you might as well never open your mouth again. Like, because you're an idiot. So that's the first thing. I hate word Nazis that can't, because it's creative writing. We're supposed to be painting pictures. We're not supposed to be being just literal telling them what's happening. We want to evoke emotion. And fire dancing up a blade evokes something that, you know, fire burned along the blade. Like, it doesn't evoke anything. Sure, it shows me that there's fire on the blade, but it doesn't, there's no motion to it. There's no magic to it. So that's one thing. And then the second thing, to be even more rude and crude, I still am of the opinion that if I wrote a twister tore through the living, you know, had a twister had torn through the living room or whatever, however you worded it, and the reader doesn't realize that I'm making a simile, then that reader's not smart enough to read me. And I just don't want them as a reader. Like, just go find someone else to read. So, and yes, I started this whole thing with, I don't want to exclude readers for, you know, dumb reasons, but they're not going to be able to follow. They're not going to be able to follow a ton of stuff that I do. So if they can't follow the fact that there wasn't an actual twister in this room, it's just, you know, messy. So,
but yeah. So, almost weakens a sentence. Started. Yep. Oh, I have a problem with started. And then people go, yes, but they didn't finish. I'm like, then put an ing verb there. That also indicates an ongoing action.
Yep.
But you do not need to say started in order to explain to me that he didn't finish. Okay. Your verb choice can show me that. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
Almost never has a place in fiction.
Yeah. I'm less hyper, you know, sensitive to the started as long as the action is interrupted. So I don't mind a Drake started to turn, but Marie grabbed his elbow. Like, I don't mind something like that because then you're showing and then start. But you're right. I could also write it as an ing verb. Turning, Marie, you know, Marie grabbed, you just have to
read. Marie grabbed Drake's elbow as he turned.
Right.
Or Marie grabbed Drake's elbow, preventing him from turning.
Right.
Or,
exactly.
You know, you don't
you can
need
to definitely flip the sentence around.
Yeah.
But it also depends on what you're doing. If Marie is the main focus, then yes, I'm 100% right at that way. But if Drake is the focus and him starting to turn, then I'm going to want that first. So it really also depends on the situation, what you're trying to accomplish, you know, all of those things. So, yeah, I think the most interesting thing for people should be to listen to how in depth we start talking about this one stupid little, oh, wait a minute, like, they're just turning. Like, how are you talking about it this much? It's because it's that important. It's about what we want the reader to consume and how we want the reader to see that.
And really, like, started, I can tolerate if it is really, really important. But think twice. Think three times before you include started. Yep. And as for almost, almost always cut it.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say absolutely always cut it, but almost always.
There is
99% of the time.
There is nothing in creative writing that is always done a certain way. Every rule can be broken. I even rules that I'm like, you, I mean, look, I have a story published in first person present tense. I'm like, we've literally just pooped all over this POV.
I will die on the multi POV first person hill. I will die on that.
Certainly. Well, that's the thing. The story is very simplistic. It starts and it ends. It is one POV. But the biggest reason why I chose it is, so it was a story that I wrote for Sony, and it's a creature called a kobold. And the best way to describe these creatures is they're like a 3-year-old hooked on crack. They don't remember what happened 2 seconds ago, and they have no idea what they're going to do 2 seconds from now. So if the character lives 100% in the moment and nothing else. And so the story just screamed to be written in first person present. The hardest part of that story is the POV character dies at the end. It
I
was very
think
hard to write the ending of that.
I think for me, with this voice especially, I would really recommend switching to past tense because this voice is very noir. I mean, it is very, just as time stretched on forever, the city loomed on the horizon. The bright lights welcomed me home, vice-infested districts and sickly smells dancing on the evening air. I drove into its maw, every bit as rugged and dangerous as the Badlands. It is noir, and noir is inevitably in past tense.
It's
Like,
much more accepted in past tense. And also that would be a tense shift too, because it'd be I drive. That's the other thing. It's just that's weird to say. I drive into its maw. There's just
yeah,
some
but that's the
present tense
thing.
verbs that are just weird.
The imagery is noir, and that is always past tense. Like, that is you. This story is fighting its tense. It's fighting its tense in the first two paragraphs because of the imagery it's using.
100%.
So,
There's one other problem that I have with that sentence.
yeah.
But before I get into that, I don't want to forget that was another thing that was brought up. So when I was talking to this girl in the writer's room that brought that first person present tense piece this week, she said, well, actually, I had originally written it in past tense. And then I was with some readers, and they actually said to try it in present tense because it'll make my voice better. And I was like, okay, tense has nothing to do with your voice. Tense does not change your voice. And then I reread her piece in past tense, and it was the same because she had this beautiful character voice. That was her strength, is she had this amazing character voice for the piece. And so I read it without changing anything. I just, shifted it to present tense as I read. And it's the same snarky character. Like it's the exact same character. Do not fall into the trap of the lie that present tense has a different voice than past tense. They have the exact same voice, period. That does not change anything. So don't do that. So here's the problem that I have with that sentence. I don't understand how stretching time has anything to do with looming cities. I can't paint that picture in my head. How are those connected in any way?
So I get what he's painting. So the road is stretches and stretches and stretches, and then far in the distance, the city appears. It's like the road looms on forever until it doesn't, until the city interrupts
Oh, maybe. Because I read it more
it.
like a drowning rat, I ate my meal with gusto. It's like, what? Drowning rats don't eat.
No, so
It's a weird.
how I would put this is, the time stretched on forever, punctuated by the city, because that's what you're saying, right? The city looms out at the end of it.
Right. Yeah, it's just a weird, it's a weird, I don't, my mind can't paint that picture. It lost.
Infinity interrupted by the looming city.
Yeah, something like that. Now I can start to see what you're saying. But it definitely, my brain just doesn't have the way it was written, my brain couldn't paint what we were trying to, I couldn't relate time to the city popping up visually. Because you can't see time.
Then, I think that we've been an hour, haven't we? I
I don't know. I didn't look at the clock, but I think so, maybe.
think so. So most of what's wrong here is run on sentences.
Yes. It
So
weakens the beat.
we've hammered on the present tense, and that is because the story's heart is fighting its tense, and that is abundantly clear in the second paragraph, which has been written almost in past tense entirely. right? And it's because the imagery is noir, and noir leans into past tense, not present.
When the story is forcing the writer to break the tense that they've chosen, then maybe that is a good sign that you're in the wrong tense. If you're
See,
naturally breaking your own rule because it's better the broken way, then maybe the choice is actually the broken way and allow the story to be what the story wants to be.
the thing about noir's imagery is some of noir's imagery is almost always written in passive voice, right? And now I know everybody says write in active voice, and most of the time that's true, but noir lends itself to some passive imagery. That is
100%.
one of the strengths of noir. But you cannot do passive voice in present tense. At least I can't.
It's much more
You
difficult.
can't do it and make it sound good. You can't say the city perches like a toad about to spring. It doesn't sound. It
Actually,
doesn't sound right.
that was pretty good. Don't you hate it when you're trying to come up with a bad example off your tongue and you can't do it?
Still sounds great. Okay, so the alternative, the city perched like a toad about to spring.
Oh yeah, no, I agree.
The verb choice, immediately better for noir.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, so I really think that if you're going to do a noirish type of feel to your first person, you should be hitting past tense. And that's why if you look at Hunger Games and so on, and the great first person present tense books that have come out, their imagery is not noir imagery. So that's one thing. The other thing is run-on sentences are not your friend.
No, they're going to weaken the story.
They always weaken your story.
They make it mushy because the audience is just, they're trying to swallow too many flavors at one time.
Blurs together. So I think those are your two big takeaways from this piece.
We should probably keep this and maybe do a part two of this and go a little deeper.
Yeah, we can do that. We
No
can.
guarantee to the audience, but there is, we didn't get very far.
We didn't get very far, but we did spend a lot of time
We did.
bitching about first person.
Well, first person present tense.
Well, you spent a lot of time.
You don't like it as much as I don't like it.
I don't like it. I don't like it, but I can normally move on.
Yeah. It's just, yeah, it is what it is.
It is, but it's not a good choice. I don't feel that first person present tense adds anything to anybody's life. I think that the Hunger Games would have been as compelling written in third person.
Yeah, the funny thing is with Hunger Games, if you actually look at it from a writing standpoint, just the craft of writing, it's actually pretty weakly written. It's got a lot of tells, it's got a lot of run-on sentences, it's got a lot of, because first present tense also kind of forces you to make odd decisions. So while it's great characters, great world, great story, which is really all the end user cares about, if it was written better, it would have just taken it, one more notch up.
I have a friend who says to me that the reason why she devoured Hunger Games and why, for example, she doesn't read Brandon Sanderson, right? Because this was the discussion we were having, Brandon Sanderson versus Hunger Games, right? And she said that Hunger Games, every chapter ends with Katniss in a tree, right? Every chapter ends with a dire situation. Every chapter pulls you into the next situation. There's a hook at the end of every chapter. And that is not true of Sanderson. And the other thing is with Hunger Games, you are very rapidly invested in Katniss, the character. From the opening sentence, you are in Katniss the character. And I think that those two, though, that is what makes Hunger Games great. It is not, it's present tense. It's not even the first person, though I think that the first person was done fairly well.
Oh, flawlessly, actually. Her
Yeah.
her first person present tense is what I tell people to go look at if you want just an example of flawless. She does not make any mistakes with her first person present tense. Again, she does make mistakes on the craft writing. It's telly, it's, you know, kind of passive. And it's an action adventure story. So had she, you know, written it better, I mean, so she would have made, you know, $50 million instead of $45 million. Like, okay.
She's obviously she did, but she told the story very well. She told a very compelling story, and a very compelling story can carry you through a lot, especially if
That's
you
what makes
understand tension, which she does understand.
100%.
She introduces tension from the first sentence. You have tension with the waking up of, like, it's tribute day. There is immediate tension. And it goes through, the tension ratchets through the entire book. Katniss ends in a tree every single chapter, right? And that's what carries you.
100%. Which is why, you know, that's something I strive for always, is to make sure that every chapter ends in
In
that
a
book
hook.
that makes you go, I have to read the next chapter. I have to. I don't care if I have to get up in the morning and go to work and it's 2 o'clock in the morning. I still have to read the next chapter. So I do try to push myself with that.
It is, and I mean, sometimes it doesn't have to be as direct as, like, Katniss in a tree. It can just be like, I'm really invested in this character and I want to know what happens next. You know, not everything has to be in a tree. Obviously, we write very big books. A reader can't sustain, you know, 200,000 words the way they can sustain 80,000 words. It's the reality, right?
Still try.
Of 100%. But I mean, epic fantasy is epic fantasy, right? It is a slower pace. You know, that's the nature of the game. Because you're telling a broader story. It's impossible to world build the kind of epic scope at a breakneck speed the whole time. You know what I mean? Like, there's limits. But regardless, like, investing the reader in the character and giving them a reason to flip the page will get you through a lot. It will gloss over a lot of problems.
Yep, all of that is 100% accurate.
And I think that that is a good place in which to end this episode.
Bye.
Thank you for tuning in. This is Marie Mullaney, your co-host on this literary adventure. Our goal is to provide you with valuable insights and discussions on writing. If you believe in our mission, please like and subscribe our podcast. Sharing our episodes with your community not only helps us grow, but also contributes to a richer, more diverse conversation about storytelling. We appreciate your support. For a deeper understanding of the topics we've discussed, head over to Just In Time Worlds on YouTube. It is a treasure trove where fantasy meets history and science. Every Tuesday, you'll find new videos that delve into the intricacies of world building, drawing from our rich real-world history. Whether you're a writer, a role player, or just a fantasy enthusiast, Just In Time Worlds offers unique insights that will enrich your perspective. Check it out and join the journey of crafting incredible worlds.
If you are ready to take your writing to the next level and work with a group of highly motivated, dedicated writers who are all working to not only improve their writing, but improve your writing, plus you get to work with me on a weekly basis, then I'll encourage you to check out writersroom.us. This is a website that I have created that I really wish I had 30 years ago. It's everything a writer needs to become a better writer. Not only do we do weekly critique sessions, both from other members as well as me, we have daily writing sessions. I do monthly classes, Q&As. We have activities. I do all sorts of learning exercises, such as I do a quarterly writing prompt contest and just tons and tons and tons of things. So if you're ready to get serious about your writing and you want to actually finish that novel and have a chance of it being published, then I encourage you to head on over to the writer's room and join me there. And as a special promotion for listeners of Releasing Your Dragon, and as a special promotion for listeners of Releasing Your Inner Dragon, I'll go one step more. If you would like to get 50% off for 3 months, reach out to me. There's a million ways you can do that. You can do it through starvingwriterstudio.com, drakeu.com, any of my social media, such as LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook, X, whatever. Reach out to me, say that you would like to check out the writer's room for 50% off, and I will send you a link that will allow you to do just that. So hopefully you're ready to start getting serious about writing, and I'll see you in the writer's room.